Welcome to Conversations with Leaders on Tremendous Life Radio, providing some of today's most influential and inspiring leaders a platform to share their stories of growing up, what happened, and what they're doing today. Now, here's your host, Todd Weaver.
We have a great lined up for you tonight. We have Mr. David G. He's the lead educator, the Chopra Center for Well-Being, and his latest book, Secrets of Meditation, is a practical guide to inner peace and personal transformation. I like the sound of that. David, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you. So exciting to be here. It's a gorgeous day, and I'm excited to be on your show. So thanks for inviting me.
My pleasure. I've been looking forward to hearing your story for quite, and it is a gorgeous day. It's a beautiful day, a spectacular day. So let's get started right away. I always like to get some of the backstory of the guest. Can you tell us about some, like where you're from, some of the early years growing up, your memory, what was going on with you?
Sure. I grew up in New York, Queens, New York, and spent most of my childhood there. And went to school in upstate New York, Syracuse University. And throughout my journeys, I started to meditate actually when I was in college. That was the first time I even heard about meditation. It was this experimental Asian studies class, and there were only 12 of us in the class, and we had a Zen master who taught us. We also got to meet and experience so many amazing teachers of that era, Ram Dass and Alan Watts, really great teachers. But we also had a very specific meditation practice, and we would sit in a circle, and our Zen master would walk around the circle with a bamboo stick in his hand, and when we had a thought, we were supposed to raise our hand, and he would come over and thwack us on the back with that bamboo stick. So I only lasted in that school meditation a couple of weeks. And then over the next 20 years, I sort of fell on and off the meditation wagon. Sometimes it was really, really important to my life, and other times months would go by. But that really gave me the opportunity to explore for many years biofeedback, and then Buddhist meditations and breath awareness meditations, and all different types of different spiritual paths and different mind body healing techniques. And then at a certain point in my life, I got deeply immersed into the world of corporate America. I was a bond trader for a while, and then I worked as a mergers and acquisitions advisor and consultant. And very, very quickly, I realized at a certain point around the year 2000 that my life was totally out of balance. Not because I was in the world of corporate America, but I think I had just sort of given up or let slip away from me all these very, very balancing and nourishing tools that I had in my life. And so in the wake of 9/11, I worked in the World Trade Center. In the wake of 9/11, I was walking down in Soho, lower Manhattan, and walking past this row of cardboard boxes that people were living in. And suddenly a hand reached out, grabbed my pant leg, and peered up at me. And this guy said, "What's going to be on your tombstone?" And that's a fairly reflective question. Somebody asks you that.
Yeah.
And it really set me on a whole other path. And, you really start to think about that. What will be your legacy? Why are we here? What's the value that you're contributing in life? When the end of your time comes, what would you like to say? Well, here's what I did, or here's what I contributed, or here's what I was able to bring into the world. And so it really made me reflect on what my next phase of life would be. So I quit my job, headed off to a meditation retreat that Deepak Chopra was holding in Oxford, England. And when that was done, I headed off to India to search the guru. So that's, I encourage people all over to, before they quit their job and fly off to India in search of the guru, that I have done all that work for you. You don't have to do that. I believe that even people in the real world working in corporate, skyscrapers and working in the most intense businesses can actually integrate these healing tools and techniques and balancing aspects of life into their life. And so I've done all that work. And that's really why I wrote Secrets of Meditation, so I can share this with as many people worldwide as possible.
Have you looked at that? I didn't know that part of the story. You must have been kind of ripe for that stranger to be grabbing you by the leg and having it either shake you the way it did, or you were just, it must have been perfect timing, or how do you see that?
You know, I believe that timing is everything. That's for sure. And yet, out of the blue, because clearly I was at that point, I was feeling unfulfilled. I was looking for an answer. And I think, you know, someone I didn't know asking me such a deep question out of nowhere really forced me to take stock. And I think, you know, we all have that opportunity. I'm sure that's why you created this radio station. You know, I'm sure that's, you know, one of the things. It's like, you know, you suddenly felt, you know what, I've got something really special to share. Let me get it out there and connect people. It's probably what, you know, I'm just guessing that. You know, what starts that? Where does that spark of creativity come from that gets us off the couch, that makes us quit a job and go in another direction, or leave a relationship and move into something else? You know, what's the thing that does that? And, you know, I believe that pain can be a very, very sound label.
Yeah, that's a drag, you know, when I come to realize that. I don't know why I have to fight so much, but typically what you said there holds true for me and in my past and in my life today, too. It's just, it blows my mind, David, that did you intuitively know to go to the meditation and those other practices? I mean, the experiences and the touches of that you had in your past, did you just go right away? Or what was the time frame of you quitting your job and going to, and how did that play out?
Yeah, well, it probably within, it's really funny, within 2 months of 9/11, I had pretty much unplugged from that world and headed off. For me, that was a very, very, you know, that was sort of like a line in the sand. That was the, you know, and it was so big on a global basis as well that it also gave me the opportunity. This wasn't just, oh, my little personal situation. It was universal. So many people were touched and affected by that. But that was really just, that was just a catalyst.
I needed
to make that shift. So for some of us, that catalyst is someone that we care about leaving us or dying or quitting or just moving away. For others of us, it can be as simple as we get a piece of news that either inspires us or moves us in one way or another. But I believe that fear can often paralyze us, but pain can really be a very, very powerful motivator.
Yeah.
I think that you know, that's usually when people hit that bottom point in terms of like how much more pain can they have. You know, that's when they go, that's it. You know, like Popeye used to say, that's all I can stand. I can't stand no more. You know, so for me, that was like, that's it. That's my low point. I don't want to experience this pain. And the thing was this, I didn't have to quit my job and I didn't have to fly off and in search of eat, pray, love. And I didn't have to do all that, but I didn't have the tools to allow me to just stay and integrate some of these balancing practices into my life. And that's why I wanted to share that message with as many people as possible, because, you know, a lot of people say, well, I'm going to quit my job and leave the country and, you know, get divorced and all that stuff. And I don't know that that's necessarily the answer, you know, to anything. I think that we now that so many of these stress management and relaxation techniques have now been scientifically proven. They have a lot more street cred. They have a lot more applicability in the corporate world, in people who would otherwise say, whoa, I don't even know what you're talking about. That sounds a little kooky to me. And, you know, we're in a new age right now. And it's really because of the advances of modern technology and brain imaging software that's allowing us to actually see scientifically and medically, that we can structurally change the brain through meditation. We can really do all these amazing things to our physiology and our emotional state through meditation, mindfulness, and awareness technique. And so I think really the world is shifting because meditation and these practices were really just once reserved for either new agers or yogis, which is, you know, a tiny, tiny sliver of people, you know, maybe a couple million people out of the 8 billion on the planet. And I think now that the facts are in and that learning keeps getting deeper and expanding, I think we can touch more people.
I think it's really wild you said about how not everybody would have to pick up and do it the way you did it. That's one of the reasons that triggered you to write the book, to help people not have to go through that kind of shift. But, I mean, they tell me that if a shift inside of us doesn't really happen, that wherever you go, you take yourself with you. So I guess if I just decide to quit my job and you know, put on a burlap sack, go to the top of a mountain somewhere, that's not going to really do it for me, you know, changing the outsides.
No, you're going to be sitting on the top of that mountain and you're going to be going, God, this burlap is so itchy. What's that about?
Yeah, it's crazy.
And then, you know, suddenly you'll be, there's this great Sufi tale. There's this wise master in a town. And so this guy walks into the town and he says, I want to move to this town. Who do I talk to? And they go, oh, go talk to the wise master. So the guy goes to the wise master and he says, listen, I want to leave my town and I want to come here. What kind of people are here? And so the wise master says to him, well, what kind of people are in your town? And he goes, oh, they're jerks. They're all gossips and they're all backstabbers and they're really unpleasant and they're not a nice group of people and everyone's trying to, you know, fight each other. I think they're all toxic. And so the wise master says, well, you know, that's interesting because that's exactly who lives in this town. And the guy goes, whoa, thanks for telling me. I'm not coming. And then the next day, another guy comes and he says, listen, I'm interested in coming to this town. Can I meet the wise master? So the wise master comes out and says to the guy, so I hear you're interested in moving to our town. Why? And he goes, oh, you know what? I don't really want to leave my town. The people there are so amazing, but I'm really looking to expand and grow. So I figured I would just come to another town and this looked like a beautiful place. And so the wise master says, well, what are the people like in your town? He goes, oh, they're friendly and loving and supportive, and they're amazing to be around, and there's such a community. And the wise master said, that's exactly who lives in this town. And so we can't escape ourselves. No matter where we go, there you are. And you bring all your baggage with you wherever you go. And sometimes a change in scenery can, you know, sort of like help in the moment, or it can help to just give you a pattern interrupt, but so quickly we devolve back to exactly who we were in terms of all our issues, complaints, and grievances. Yeah. And so you don't have to go anywhere, and that's really what I wanted to stress to people. You don't have to quit your job. You don't have to head off to India. You don't have to, like, search, you know, for the guru. The guru is inside. Mm-hmm. The guru is inside of every one of us, from the most woo-woo, you know, new ager to the most conservative, you know, fundamentalist. The guru is inside.
That's reassuring to know. And I believe it completely. I really do. But it's funny that you're on the show tonight, and I didn't realize this. I was on your blog, and this is Stress Awareness Month. Is that correct?
We are in the last waning week of Stress Awareness Month, yeah. And guess what? May is National Meditation Month. So stress awareness followed by meditation. That's perfect.
All right. That is perfect. Help us with it, and we'll get into the book. Help me. I don't know. Maybe everybody asks you this. Maybe you're sick of hearing this question. But can you define for myself and the listeners kind of what is meditation? Maybe there's many definitions of that. Kind of the real clinical definition.
Yeah, Todd, I think it's critical that I think we really, everyone needs to be comfortable with the definition, because I think more people get spooked by it or are intimidated by it because, you know, they have this vision of somebody levitating with their legs crossed and they are living in a cave and they're on their back with their burlap sack. Meditation is simply awareness. what it is. You know, I spend a lot of time teaching members of the military and teaching law enforcement through the Blue Courage Nobility Program, working with the Department of Justice. And, you know, they ask that same question in the first 10 seconds. Wait a second. Is this going to make me slower? Is this going to make me more crazy? What are you doing? Am I going to get sucked into a cult? It's simply awareness. And so we have 60,000 to 80,000 thoughts a day. Add into that all the sensory inputs that are pouring into us are, you know, what we're seeing, what we're hearing, what we're smelling, tasting, touching. You know, take that, you know, into our intellect, which is like the processor of all that information. So that's just pouring into you. But if you can use a couple of these different awareness techniques, whether that's meditating using your breath, meditating using a mantra, or meditating using a visual, you know, or one of those senses, you can actually slow your mind down. You can actually slow the workings of the brain down, making the brain more efficient. And then there's all these other physiological benefits that happen. So what's meditation? I would say meditation is simply the progressive quieting of the fluctuations of the mind.
Okay.
And they don't ever get to zero. That's when we die. You know, they say brain stops functioning. But you figure 60,000 to 80,000 thoughts a day, that's 1.2 thoughts every 1 second. They're coming in. And so meditation allows it to slow them just a little bit.
Well, first of all, and you said it earlier in the show, so there has to be a desire to slow the brain down. And a lot of times, like you mentioned, that comes from pain, discomfort, some sort of disturbance where we really look to take, I guess, control is the word, of our own thinking. And so we have the desire to do that. And then we get your book. And we have to start somewhere. Where, or with the people that you teach and seminars, where do you start with people that have no experience with meditation?
Well, you know, I teach so many different groups. This week I'm actually teaching the Seduction of Spirit Meditation Retreat with Deepak Chopra. Last night, Eckhart Tolle and Wayne Dyer were there as well, like special guests. You know, so that's like a 7-day meditation retreat. So everyone pretty much has already bought into the context and into the concept. All right, we're all going to get chill for a week. We're all going to meditate. We're all going to do yoga. You know, so that's a very, very different conversation because everyone's saying, please teach me to meditate.
Right.
I think that's a really fairly small sliver of the world. Uh-huh. I mean, it's beautiful, you know, but when I'm there, I'm preaching to the choir. I don't really have to convince them of anything.
Yeah, and I'm not the choir. So, you know, where you start off with somebody that meets you on the street, let's say, and says, hey, you seem pretty peaceful and content with yourself in the world, and I'm pissed. And so what do you do?
I think that's really great. So the place that I start is with stress. Everyone has stress. Every being on the planet has stress. And stress is simply when our needs, whatever those needs are in the moment, are not met. We get constricted. And how we respond is technically our stress response. And so, you know, there are some classic biological stress responses like fight, flight. Someone threatens our life. That stuff happens to our body and our mind. Then there's an emotional version of fight, flight. Someone's mean to us. Someone challenges us. Someone embarrasses us publicly or even privately. Someone says something to us that we interpret as mean. You know, something happens. And in that conversation, something that we think is ours gets threatened. You know, I mean, it could be something as simple as that. Is there a sports team that you root for?
Not really. I like the underdog, usually. I root for the underdog, David.
Okay, well, something like that. So let's say you and I are watching some game and there's a favorite and there's an underdog. And then somebody comes into the room and says something, and like, you have no attachment, but someone says something mean about the underdog. Yep. No, those guys are a bunch of slackers. They never win. You might actually, like, internally, at some level, I doubt you'll lose sleep over it, but you may inside say, no, listen, I think these guys are pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's not, the second you start to defend something, that's where stress occurs. Because the only thing you would defend is something that's either your point of view or something that you feel attached to or connected to. And so that can be anyone. And that's why as I travel around the world, you know, we can always locate something that has constricted somebody. And it doesn't have to be something profound. You know, it can be, oh my God, my favorite ice cream is Magnum double chocolate bars. You know, and then someone says, oh, I know they're horrible.
Absolutely.
And then suddenly you go, no, they're not. And then suddenly you get into it. Well, that creates a little stress. So even at the most infantile level, we can experience that. But that's where I start. And so I would say you have stress. I have stress. We all have unmet needs. We all, you know, get to the airport this weekend and we're trying to catch a flight. And suddenly because of the sequester or whatever's going on, you know, we have to sit there for 2 hours. So we could get annoyed at that. We could get irritated with that information. We can pound the table. We can say, I'm going to miss my connection. You know, there's a whole bunch of things that we can do. But anytime a need is not met, we experience stress. And that's usually 8 to 15 times a day. And when we experience that, essentially, it raises our heart rate. Adrenaline, cortisol, and glucagon, these stress hormones, surge into our body. They bring all the drama into our life.
Yeah.
Our sex hormone, our growth hormone, our immune system gets suppressed a little bit. The platelets in our blood that flow through the plasma become plump and sticky because this goes back to the original fight flight response that we were hardwired with 20,000 years ago that would want to protect us in case we got cut by something threatening our life. So it starts to clot internally as well. Well, the same thing happens when someone starts arguing with you or when one of your needs is not met. So we've learned now that there's actually this horrible, you know, physiological and emotional 1-2 punch that happens to us when we order the chicken and suddenly they bring the beef instead. Someone's supposed to meet us at 1 o'clock and it's 1:20 and they're not there. We were supposed to get a phone call and we didn't. We weren't supposed to get a phone call and we did. Suddenly we're about to go out and we realize, you know, our kid just spilled the milk or our dog just, you know, tore the curtain. You can go on and on and on and on. You're trying to get to a meeting and you're in your car and suddenly you hit 7 red lights in a row. And, you start to get more irritated with each one. So every single one of those is a need not being met. We have our emotional needs, attention, affection, appreciation, and acceptance. We have the need for additional clarity. And we have the need that our sense of self, our ego, is feeling okay about itself. And anytime there's the slightest constriction. So this is the starting point for all conversations, whether I'm working with law enforcement, whether I'm working with a group of financial advisors, whether it's just like high powered, high stress, you know, business women, or whether it's just moms, or, you know, it doesn't even matter. Yeah. We're all bumping into something that when we hit that brick wall, we go, ouch. And that's where meditation or awareness training can really take our lives to the next level.
David, it's remarkable those examples you gave us there. It really doesn't matter what I'm hearing, what the actual trigger is. It's the exact same response in our bodies and in our minds, the same response, whether it is the ice cream melted or, you know, there's a fire in the building next door. It's the same kind of thing. So I tend to work on caution as far as to be judging what is valid in other people's lives as far as that's a valid stressor and that one is a stupid one. That's not really the point here at all, correct?
Right. We probably say that most of them are stupid, no matter what.
Okay.
So even the ones we prize as like, no, that's a very, very valid one. It's probably stupid as well.
It's wild to listen to you so far, though, that inside of us, I believe there is a longing for peace and serenity. And that's why it's it looks good to somebody else, say if they see somebody calm. Yet our habits and all the things that we've been so ingrained in our thinking process always go to the chaos and drama. You know, it's remarkable to me.
Yeah, and whoever we're with can really rub off on us as well. Yeah. We start to get entrained. You know, so if you're like sitting down and you're pretty relaxed and someone's really scattered and they come into the room and they're like, you know, angry and upset and this and that, you know, even if we don't buy into what they're upset about, we start to get irritated with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if someone comes in and they're speaking more slowly and they're breathing more slowly and they're more relaxed, we find that comforting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as turbulent as your 9 months in the womb might have been, and some people had very, very turbulent, you know, journeys during those 9 months and births. But still, it was a very, very safe place. It was a place where we got known. It was a place where all of our needs got met. You know, right up until that moment, anytime we were hungry, food came in. Anytime we had to go to the bathroom, not an issue. You know, suddenly we get born, and now we're hungry, and someone's got to do it for us. And we've got to go to the bathroom, and someone's got to take care of that for us. Mm-hmm. And so from that moment we have been born, we've been looking for someone to take care of us. And that's why when someone is very maternal or even paternal or calm or relaxing or nourishing, we like, hey, I want to hang out with that person. I feel so good when I'm with that person.
Yeah. And that I've already – go ahead, Dave.
Go ahead.
No,
I have this five-year-old – mindful Morkie. She's a Maltese Yorkie. Peaches the Buddha Princess. And she was an LA rescue. But she's a total chill dog. And she meditates with me every morning. And I pretty much, you know, when someone says, hey, is that Peaches? You know, because I carry her around wherever I go, no matter what. And, you know, even when I'm at some like seminar where there's 1,000 people, I've got Peaches with me, because people go, oh, can I pet your dog? And I go, why don't you hold her? And just holding that dog for 10 seconds lowers your heart rate, slows you down. So there are so many things that each of us could do to get into that calmer state, that more meditative state. So whether that's holding an animal or breathing or meditating, or relax, you know, there's so many different ways that we can move through stress and really let it go.
Okay, so I'm the guy that ran into you on the street and I'm pissed, and you identified and you kind of explained to me what happens every time I get my feelings hurt or I start experiencing this stress, and I'm hungry for what you have. So I have a desire.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask you, what should I do? What should I do now? What should I do next? What would you tell me?
I would say the very, very, very first thing to do, again, because I'm not going to try to solve your anger in the moment. It's deeper than that. You know, but what I can do is teach you how to invite or introduce a pattern interrupt into your life, even the teeniest little pattern interrupt, just so there's some kind of break in the dramatic flow or the melodrama or the intensity or the building up of those stress hormones in your body. So that's what I would say first of all. And I would say, hey, I'm not going to teach you to meditate because you're probably resisting, but how about we just breathe? How about we breathe a little bit? And I developed this really easy technique, and now I've taught this to a couple of 100,000 people around the world. And culture-wise, whether it's been in Europe or South Africa or Asia or in North America or Australia, this works. So it doesn't matter what culture. And I call it 16 seconds to bliss. Now, there are some people who, like, when they hear the word bliss, they get very nervous. They think there's like some woo-woo kind of cult happening. So with those people, I call it 16 seconds to clarity.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay, now,
go ahead.
No, continue, please, David.
Well, the 16 seconds to bliss, anyone can do. So whether you could be so pissed off, you could still do it. You could be really, really angry, you could still do it. You could hate everyone who meditates, you could still do it. You could find it really, you know, wimpy and soft, you could still do it. Because no one, everyone's still breathing. All I'm just going to suggest is that you breathe in a particular way to find that pattern interrupt. Make sense?
And yeah, absolutely. Again, that's part of the awareness hit, right? So,
yeah,
if you also, I saw maybe on one of the blog posts you had or somewhere, and you just mentioned it, that resistance. That seems like that's a pretty common denominator in most people. I don't know, it's through our ignorance or whatever, that resistance. So if I start saying, well, and give you all the reason why it's not going to work for me, can you dispel some of the myths of you know,
yeah, well,
take away
sure,
my excuses?
Well, we can always do that. But I also, the fact that it's 16 seconds, it's like, come on. You don't have 16 seconds? Tell me, the president of the United States has 16 seconds. Oprah has 16 seconds. You know, I don't care who that person is. They have 16 seconds.
And it depends how much you're hurting.
That would be
right? It depends how bad you're hurting. You're willing to give up 16 seconds if you're hurting enough, correct?
Right, exactly. And my feeling is, if you don't even have 16 seconds, then probably I'm not going to convince you that you're going to develop a meditation practice.
Right.
You know, come back when you're in a little more pain is probably what I would say. I'll be waiting for you.
Come back when you have 32 seconds, right? Then come back. We'll double up on it, right?
Exactly.
Well, that is the main goal there is, well, maybe a couple of things, but the way I'm understanding you, David, is it's to disrupt that thinking process, the 16 seconds. Am I correct in that?
Yes. And pretty much it's pretty easy. You know, I always suggest when people breathe in any way that you breathe in through your nostrils because the breath goes deeper than if you breathe in through your mouth. And so if you can just breathe in through your nostrils to the count of four and fill your belly and then hold it in your belly to the count of four and then ever so gently let it come out of your body to the count of four and then hold it out. So that would be 4, 4, 4, 4, 16 seconds. And the key is if you can observe your breath while you're doing that, or if you can witness your breath while you're doing that, for those 16 seconds, I mean, why don't we do it right now? Because we've got 16 seconds here.
Absolutely. You're right.
Why don't all of our listeners do it? You know, and if you'd like, you can close your eyes unless you're driving. But, you know, otherwise, you know, you can keep your eyes open. It doesn't even matter. But right now, you feel you got all this stuff in your head. You're thinking about stuff. You're thinking about life and all these things that are going to happen or did happen already. And if instead, right now, we place our awareness on our breath, and together we inhale to the count of four through our nose until our belly is totally filled up. And now we just let it sit there to the count of four, 3, 2, 1. And then we effortlessly let that go up again, up our chest, out of our throat, out of our nostrils to the count of four. And then hold that out to the count of 4, 3, 2, 1. And now just breathe regularly.
Nice.
So that was
16 seconds, huh? Nice. Thank you. That was very nice.
In those 16 seconds, whatever was going on in your life before, you weren't thinking about it for those 16 seconds.
Nice. Now you can do that throughout the entire day, correct? Whenever I want you.
Exactly. Yes. That's brilliant. That's what I recommend to people because some people go, wait a second, you want me to meditate for 30 minutes after I wake up? I go, no. How about you just plug into this? How about you every hour you do 16 seconds of that breathing? And by the time you hit like the fourth hour, you're like, ooh, I'm a lot calmer.
Yeah, then you get the payoff. So then you know that it works. And then that's the reward almost at the end of what you thought was so hard or, you know, some sort of sacrifice. And that probably what would trigger me to continue to practice, correct?
Absolutely. You know, by noon, let's assume you did that, you know, from 8 o'clock in the morning till noon. By the time you hit noon, you would say, huh, that's pretty interesting. I actually do feel a little less drama. I feel a little less intensity, a little less pressure. I feel just a little clearer. And that's when we're talking about 16 seconds. So, You know, and I think that's a powerful, powerful thing. So right there, we bump into this guy in the middle of the street, and suddenly he'd be going, oh, maybe this stuff does work. Now, of course, if we, like, really plugged him in and wired his brain and wired his pulse and wired everything, we would actually see over the course of several hours, because there's a halo effect every time we meditate. And technically, that was a 16-second meditation. And so what happens is we scientifically know that in those 16 seconds, your heart rate lowered. You suppressed adrenaline, cortisol, and glucagon. Which meant that the drama of your life came down a little less emotional turbulence. Your sex hormone, your growth hormone, and your immune system got elevated a little bit. And those platelets, instead of getting plump and sticky, they got smoother and more fluid. And so there are actual benefits to 16 seconds of breathing.
I love it. What? David, now I'm that pissed off guy, and I, you know, in spite of myself, I did what you told me to do for those 16 seconds, like we just did here, and I walk away from you, let's say never to meet you again, or whatever tomorrow may bring. But as I'm walking away, I'm thinking, you know what? I almost feel that halo. I feel a little better about that, and I'm getting a little more hungry now. Like maybe there is a solution here. Maybe there is a way for me to be more peaceful and serene. Next thing I do, well, I guess you're going to tell us the next thing we do is buy your book, right? And then follow the directions in there. But once I'm starting to buy into this, with the resistance goes down because I'm seeing the reward, getting the payoff, and I buy your book. Is your book, does it give us a kind of practical how to do that as we keep trying to grow in our meditation?
Yes. Well, you know, the reason I wrote Secrets of Meditation was actually to demystify this, because I think more people are held back from meditation because, you know, they think, oh, and now I have to like sell everything I own and pray to some, you know, some other, you know, guru. And, that has nothing to do with meditation. That's just, you know, that's just like some weird stuff we've seen on TV and movies and read in books. But actually the subtitle to my book, Secrets of Meditation, is A Practical Guide to Inner Peace and Personal Transformation.
Mm. So that's what got my attention. That's what got my attention, David. Sorry to interrupt you, but that makes a little more sense to me. I don't really know what you're talking about, but that kind of seems to sound pretty good to me. Inner peace.
Right. Yeah. I think everyone's looking for a little more peace of mind. Even if your life is going great, you certainly know that last week it wasn't, and maybe next week it won't either. You know, we're going to have these surprises. And I think we can all benefit from a little more peaceful thought process. You know, we're all having thoughts that are disturbing. We're all having experiences with other people that could be smoother. We all struggle with our core relationships because we want them to keep evolving. We're all looking for deeper fulfillment in our work so that we're not just working for a paycheck or feeling taken advantage of. You know, these are like very, very universal and common experiences. And so I believe that through the process of meditation, and I didn't want to put it into like one thing and say, no, you have to do this. Right. And so that's why, for me, it was important to reveal and share so many different types of meditations, body-mind meditations and visual meditations and sound meditations and energy meditations and physical body sensory meditations and Buddhist meditation, mantra and tantra and chanting, so many different things, so that I don't care who you are. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, a Maasai warrior, you know, living in the bush in Africa, or whether you're an investment banker wearing a three-piece suit and wingtips, or whether you're a nanny, you know, wearing yoga clothes every single minute of your life, and it doesn't matter where you are. Each of us is going to say, oh, you know what? I like sound, or I like physical touch. I love massages, or I like looking at stuff. I believe in energy, so I would like to tap into that. Each of us has a certain access point that we feel most comfortable with. And that's what I wanted to reveal in the book, because most you know, most people who teach meditation, there's a very specific practice or a school of meditation, just like yoga. You know, there's lots of, if you teach yoga, it's rare that you teach five different types of yoga. Mm-hmm. Most yoga teachers teach, you know, they teach one kind of yoga. And whether it's, you know, whether it's Kundalini or whether it's Anusara, whether it's Seven Spiritual Law, you know, there's so many different types. But people are trained in one thing and they like to teach one thing. And for me, what I wanted to share is, yes, I've been trained, but not in one thing. I've been trained in so many different types of schools of meditation, and I don't have an agenda. I just want people to have a little more peace in their lives. So I don't care what you use to meditate, whether it's your breath or whether it's a mantra or whether it's music, doesn't matter, you know, whatever it is. But I wanted to share as many different ways, because try them all, and then you say, oh, you know what? I really like that one.
It's kind of like the desire to experience the shift is the key point. Like you said, the guy on the street that's resisting, you say, hey, come back when you have 16 seconds. It's the almost the desire. And at that point, whatever, I guess, you're most comfortable with is going to work for you because you want it to work, correct?
Right, right.
When you kind of took away all our excuses, David, with you took away everybody's excuses now for blocking off the usefulness and the practical, you know, the practical use of meditation. I like that.
Yeah, well, you know, come on. You know, people have an hour for Facebook, but they don't have 16 seconds for themselves. You know, or like we could go down, if you're a consultant or a lawyer or someone who like charges for your time, you know, you're blocking out, you know, what you're doing every 15 minutes of the day, because you have to like submit that to your boss or whatever, and then they bill someone, or you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. So I know what you're talking about.
We don't pay as much attention to that whole process. And so, you know, like 24 hours goes by and we go like, I don't even know where that time went. Mm-hmm. And so I encourage people to just take one day and just write down, what do you do every 15 minutes? And then at the end of that 24 hours, you'll realize it's like probably like 4 hours where you just like mindlessly surfing around, you know, online, where you're just like staring into space, where you're not doing anything. And then you realize, you know what? You do have time. And wouldn't you rather invest that time into you rather than, you know, bounce back and forth from Pinterest to Twitter to Facebook to whatever? And so we have the time if we would like to give it to ourselves. Mm-hmm. So when people say to me, oh, I'm too busy, I'm a mom, or I'm too busy, I work 18 hours a day, or I'm too busy, you know, I've got kids or pets, or I'm a high achiever, like whatever. You know, Oprah Winfrey, who I consider one of the most busiest people on the planet, you know, she's got time to meditate twice a day for 30 minutes each time. So, you know, yes, you know, she probably could pay someone to meditate for her.
Yeah, I'm not sure she'd get any much value out of that, though, David. But,
right. You know, that's the whole thing. But instead, she shows up every single morning and every single afternoon and dedicates an hour to herself. Yeah. And then you start to find out become really super successful people like Richard Branson, like Howard Stern, Deepak Chopra, David Lynch. There's so many really, really powerful people. Bill Clinton just announced, you know, he now does Buddhist meditations. He even hired, Bill Clinton just hired last week, a monk, a Buddhist monk, to teach him what's the right way to meditate. And so we're finding that some really, really busy, high-powered and successful and fulfilled individuals actually incorporate this as part of their day.
It seems to me, in kind of a wacky way, the more busy you are, the more reason you would have to take 16 seconds for yourself from time to time.
Yes, but that also feeds the excuse.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the double-edged sword on that one.
You mentioned something earlier about when somebody walks into a room and they're angry or disturbed and you can almost feel it. It works the same way as you start becoming more peaceful and serene and aware as well, correct? I mean, people feel that. I bet people come to you like a magnet almost. There's an inner sense of whatever is going on over there, I want that. And I can forget about all this other stuff I was just bitching about. What's going on over there? Do you ever get, I mean, do you experience that?
I experience it all the time. And when I first got involved in this about 11 years ago, I was in the exact opposite. I would walk up to people and say, you know what, you look a little out of balance. I need to teach you to get more in balance. And they would say, get away from me. You're crazy. And then I realized that this has to be something that you choose.
Mm-hmm.
You can't impose it on anyone. They've got to be ready. You know, we've often heard when the student is ready, the mm-hmm. teacher appears.
Sure.
And so that's the place we have to be in. And that's why, you know, on my website, davidg.com, that's why I put up over 100 free meditations that are guided meditations and silent meditations and visual meditations because I want people to connect, find the thing that works for you. Don't let me impose it on you, you know, because I teach a lot of different types of meditation, but like mm-hmm. find that thing. And if it's breathing, great. Then let's take it deeper. But yeah, I get a couple of thousand emails every single day from people who are like, I bumped into you 2 years ago, and now I'm ready. And so for me, that's great. That's great.
Well,
I know that I was scaring away a lot of people when I first started because I was, I was right. too like, come on, let me help you balance your life.
Yeah.
And they were like, get away from me. You're too intense. And
well, you discovered something that works, though, and you do it with passion. You did it well-meaning. I mean, you just are so into it. You think, oh, my God, this is great. I got to tell everybody about it. But like you're describing, that doesn't always work so well.
Right. Well, now I've realized it's purely leading by example, you know.
Yes.
And for me, I just want to, meditate as much as I can. I want to really open my heart as much as I can, which makes me more vulnerable, and I could get hurt more, so I'll risk that. But that allows me to also, I'm not trying to convince anyone of anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
If you want to learn, reach out to me, and I will work with you. And if you don't want to learn, that's okay. You know,
yeah,
do
absolutely.
Whatever.
Can you describe really, I don't know if you can put this into words, but in the last couple of years or whatever, as you've been transforming, evolving, learning, seeking, what is it as your sense of purpose and the joy that you get from knowing that you can be of value to other people just through that attraction process? What does that mean to you?
It's the deepest, most fulfilling thing that I could ever even imagine. I used to really think, and for a solid 20 years, I used to think that the path to fulfillment was a question of how much money I could amass. And I didn't do that. I didn't do that very well, actually. I made lots of other people money, but I didn't build a pile of money. And so that turned out to be not very fulfilling at all. And it became a chore. And I think that, most people really are somewhat unfulfilled in their work because they're just phoning it in to get a paycheck. You know, we're just trying to get through the day, get some food on the table and try to be a little happier, And now, really probably for the last 7 years, as I've traveled the world and as people have told me their stories, and I had a very rare gift. I was given this amazing gift by Deepak Chopra and by David Simon. I was offered the opportunity to teach meditation every single day for more than 10 years. And that allowed me to connect with people from every walk of life, every gender, every culture, every age, every issue. You know, people diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and, 12-year-old kids and everyone in between. And so that really allowed me to see all the different ways people respond and to really have them come into my life, with their story and then allow their story to evolve, And like 2 years later when someone's like, oh my God, you wouldn't believe it. I'm in remission and everything's going great and my kids are doing this and all that. That I can't even describe to you. I feel amazingly fulfilled in every single minute now, and it's great. It's really my life went from being totally unfulfilling to totally fulfilling. And as long as I can keep helping people and touching people in different areas of their lives, then I'll just keep doing it.
I love it, David. I'm glad you quit your job. You know, I'm sure other people are too. You know what I mean? Tell us how to get the book. Again, it's davidg.com, right? That's davidji.com, correct?
Yes. And that's a lot of people website. Say to me, what does that even mean? And when I first came to the Chopra Center about 11 years ago, David Simon, the co-founder, said to me, you can't be David. I'm David. You could be David G. And I said, David G? Like 12-step David G? And he says, no. J-I is a term of reverence in Hindi. It means beloved. And I said, oh, well, David in the Bible means beloved. I'm beloved. That just stuck. So if you go to davidg.com, you can buy the book. You can go to amazon.com. You can go to hayhouse.com. The book just last week won the Nautilus Award for 2013. Nice. In the area of spirituality. So that was really exciting.
Nice.
And all proceeds from this book go to charity. So it's a win-win-win-win-win for anyone who does connect with that.
Nice. Congratulations on that, too. That's really cool. That's wonderful. So what else you have coming up? Do you want to give us anything? Do you have anything on secret you're working with or what's coming up in the future?
I got a lot of exciting things coming up. So on Sunday, I'll be in Grand Prairie, Canada with Jack Canfield for Experience the Peace Festival. Then on May 10th and 11th, I'll be in Boston with the Boston Buddha for a pre-Mother's Day meditation weekend. And then from May 31st to June 2nd, I'll be up in Whistler at this Celebration of Self Festival. And then I know in September I'm going to be in Europe. So I'm probably doing something every 3 or 4 days. And I'm just loving traveling the world and sharing inner peace with people. And no matter how rigid or flexible they are, they're finding their lives are becoming more fulfilling. But thank you for asking about that. I also have 3 events coming up that I'm doing myself right here. One is the Secrets of Meditation Healing Immersion. That's in the end of October. And then I have a teacher training from September 23rd to the 29th. And then I'm going on a Mexican vacation with people to Tulum, November 16th through the 23rd. So lots of
nice
stuff.
Nice. And everybody can get most of that information on the website, davidg.com, correct?
Yes. Yes. And if anyone has a question or if you're interested, anyone can send me an email at info@davidg.com.
Nice. Very good. Well, you're going to get some probably. Help me with this. Boy, the time goes fast, David. It's been such a joy. Do you really believe that there is a shift happening kind of universally in the world? It seems to me that a lot more people are trying to get more in touch with their own divinity, their own spirituality inside, seeking more peace and a way to have a vision to be more empowering and encouraging to others. Do you definitely have definitive proof of that? Or do you believe that?
Yeah, I believe that we co-create our world. You know, so I believe that we have co-created all the monsters that have existed in our lives for the last several thousand years, and we've co-created all the saints that have existed as well. And what I find is that more and more people, like we would never think that law enforcement would connect to meditation, but at a certain point, even they hit that wall where they say, you know what? Too many of us are committing suicide, you know? Mm-hmm. Too many of us are taking our work home with us. Too many of us are living unfulfilled lives. So I think at a certain point, you know, we used to talk about, you know, survival of the fittest. I think we're evolving to survival of the wisest. Mm-hmm. And it's that survival of the wisest where everyone, no matter where you are, is waking up to the fact that, of course, we're all children of God. And if you don't believe in God, then okay, there's something bigger than us. You know, so call it the universe or whatever you want to call it. But we're all, you know, we're all just trying to do our best from our own level of consciousness. And I think as social media, and TV popularizes these things. You know, McDonald's has yoga in their commercials now. And, you know, lots of even like pharmaceutical companies are like showing people, you know, sitting in meditation in the woods and stuff like that. So it's becoming a little more acceptable to the mainstream. And I believe this critical mass is just keeps moving and moving and moving and moving forward. And so as long as people like you keep doing, you know, such powerful work to suddenly share this, I'm sure there's a lot of listeners right now who have like no clue at all, you know, of what meditation was before this started. And there's some people who are like, yeah, 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 I meditate every single day. But I think, you know, we're the critical mass is building. And, you know, one person at a time, one heart at a time, one meditator at a time. And so if I can encourage people who are experiencing pain just to breathe a little bit more, they'll probably have a little less pain.
That's beautiful, David. I really, you know, I believe all that. I know I'm playing my part in it, but I had to get, had to experience some pain too before I kind of looked in a different direction. I guess it's kind of across the board typical for most of us. So I'm so grateful that you took the time out to be on the show and share some of your stuff. We just touched the iceberg here. We could go show after show. Maybe I'll track it down in a while. Sounds like you're pretty busy. But I really, really appreciate you taking time out and being on the show. I really, really do, Dave.
Well, thanks for inviting me. And I'd love to come back on maybe in a few months. And, you know, maybe you and I can check back in the meantime how your 16 seconds is going and how that process is going. And, you know, I also have created tons and tons of guided meditations that I would encourage people to, and they're free. Just go to davidg.com and use some guided meditations. It's a great way to dip your toe in and, you know, whether you're a physician or whether you're a realtor and everybody in between. You can, you know, sit down for 5 to 7 minutes, listen to a guided visualization, and it will help you to achieve some calm, perhaps move through some pain, and shift you. Yeah, David, so I would encourage everyone to go to davidg.com and sign up for my newsletter, which is free, and you can always unsubscribe. And that way, every single week, you get free meditations and free information and videos and things along those lines.
David G., thank you so much for being on the show. Thanks, everybody, for listening to this show. We really appreciate all the feedback we've been getting, all the support. We got some incredible, incredible guests coming up with a lot of inspiration and a lot of experience, just like G. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Until next time, make it a great day.